TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Arctic Amplification, Climate Change and Global Warming, New Challenges from the Top of the World, Professor Peter Warams. The most important news for September that affects all of us, wherever we live, comes from the Arctic, but it's rarely covered. NBC4 on Tom Hartman, we're an exception.
Satellite imagery shows Arctic sea ice melting away to the second lowest level since records began in the late 1970s, creating more open ocean, which impacts global weather by adding heat and moisture for storms.
And welcome back. I'm very pleased to have on the line with us Professor Peter Warams. He's a professor of ocean physics, head of the Polar Ocean Physics Group at the Department of Applied Mathematics and Theoretical Physics at the University of Cambridge in the United Kingdom. You've written about an ice-free Arctic, the possibility, you predicted, the data has indicated that within the next few years, the Arctic will be completely ice-free for the first time in over 100,000 years. What are the consequences of that, the people on this planet?
There's a whole series of consequences, which are all, unfortunately, rather serious. Firstly, the retreat of the sea ice or the loss of the summer sea ice will mean that global warming will increase because you're changing a large area of white to dark. So you're reducing the average albedo of the planet, and that will mean that it's absorbing more radiation in summer. Secondly, there's going to be an acceleration of sea level rise because the warm air that's lying over this open water in the Arctic Ocean moves in over the island of Greenland and gives you surface melt of the Greenland ice sheet. We now found in 2012, for instance, that the entire surface of the Greenland ice sheet was starting to melt for a period in the summer, which is completely new. And this will mean that sea level rise will be accelerated because that melt water runs off into the ocean. Possibly one of the most severe threats is the fact that the shallow waters off the Arctic coasts, especially the Siberian coasts, where there's very wide continental shelves with only about 50 to 100 metres of water depth, that water can warm up during the summer months. And this will give you positive temperatures on the seabed, which start to thaw out the seabed permafrost, which has been sitting there frozen since before the last ice age. This has never happened before, and because the sea ice never retreated very much in summer, so the water temperature couldn't rise above zero. The warming water thaws the permafrost, and the permafrost is acting as a cap for a very large amount of methane, which is sitting in the sediments underneath in the form of methane hydrates. So you release the pressure by releasing that permafrost. This methane comes out as huge bubble plumes. That's already happening. It's been detected by scientists all over the Russian Arctic, most recently by a Swedish expedition, before that by various US-Russian expeditions. Each time they go, there's more and more bubbles, plumes coming out. And the fear is that there'll be a general release of methane trapped under those sediments, which could cause a very rapid rise in the rate of sea level. We calculated it could give you 0.6 of a degree warming of the planet in 5 years. So I think we must be really afraid of a methane pulse.
That was Professor Peter Warams on the Tom Hartman program in June 2016. And before that, a news clip from NBC4 of September 19, 2016. Peter Warams is the UK's most experienced sea ice scientist. He has made more than 50 expeditions to both polar regions, working from ice camps, icebreakers, and aircraft. He made 6 submerged voyages to the North Pole on Royal Navy submarines. Warams' research group in Cambridge has been the only UK group with the capacity to carry out field work on sea ice. With increasing urgency, Warams is calling attention to the melting sea ice of the Arctic. In his most recent book, A Farewell to Ice, he writes, "Our planet has changed color. Today from space, the top of the world in the northern summer looks blue instead of white. We have created an ocean where there was once an ice sheet. Polar ice is thinning and retreating with unprecedented speed. All our ingenuity cannot at present change that, because ice only grows in winter, but can melt year-round. Its growth rate is limited, while melt rate is unlimited. In a lecture in Milano, Italy, in May 2015, Peter Wadhams explained how the melting of the Arctic affects the rest of the world. There are very few scientists who so thoroughly understand the complexity of the climate system generated by the Arctic. Here's Professor Peter Wadhams in the first part of a one-hour lecture, Arctic Amplification, Climate Change and Global Warming, New Challenges from the Top of the World.
Now, they've given me a very long title, so therefore I'm going to have to give a very long lecture. And there are three main elements. One is Arctic amplification, which is the fact that the Arctic is warming faster than any other part of the world. Climate change, how fast is warming happening throughout the world, and therefore how much faster is it happening in the Arctic? And then what are the impacts that Arctic change is having on the world? And I hope to show that many of the important changes that are happening globally actually come from rapid change happening in the Arctic. The Arctic is helping to drive the whole process of climate change in the world. So we start with the amplification question. And this is the fact that if we look at the Arctic, we find it's warming faster than any other part of the world. And we know that with every possible source of data, it's been possible to reconstruct the climate record for the last 1,000 years. And we find that the climate gradually was getting cooler. We were slowly moving towards a new ice age. It was warmer in 1,000 years ago, so the Vikings were able to settle in Greenland. And then it got colder until in the mid-19th century, it was a very cold time. Then suddenly the climate changed and it got warmer very, very rapidly. And that corresponded to the Industrial Revolution, when we started burning coal, basically. And therefore we were putting carbon dioxide into the atmosphere from coal burning, and that started the whole process of man-induced global warming, anthropogenic warming. Well, if you look at the climate curve for the Arctic, this is all the stations north of 60 degrees, between 60 and 90, we find there's the same pattern as the rest of the world. But if we look at the scale, we find that the total amount of warming in the Arctic over that whole period has been something like 3 degrees. But if we look back at the world, we see the total amount of warming is only 0.8 of a degree. So the Arctic has followed the same pattern of warming as the rest of the world, but there's been much more warming, about 3 or 4 times as much. So that's Arctic amplification. When we compare all the stations, all the weather stations in the world, we find that the warming that's happened since the mid-20th century is very much greater in high northern latitudes than in over the world as a whole on average. So if we look at where that heating is concentrated, we find that the greatest warming is happening in the western part of the Arctic Ocean and in northern Baffin Bay. These are parts of the ocean which I'll show are actually ice-free now in the summer and didn't used to be. So the fact that there's open water there instead of ice means that the weather warms up. There's warmer air over the water because there isn't any ice on it. So the greatest warming is in parts of the Arctic where there used to be sea ice, but now there isn't. Now, in the planet as a whole, this is what's happened in the last few years. There's been some indication that the heating has flattened off, and this has been a kind of gift to people who don't believe in climate change. They think, well, nothing's happening because in the last 10 years, that the average temperature of the Earth hasn't gone up. But the amount of heating of the Earth has increased. The Arctic has continued to heat up very fast, And there is extra heat going into the planet, but instead of warming air temperatures, at the moment it's all being absorbed in the ocean and heating up the deep ocean, especially the Pacific Ocean. So if we look at this Arctic amplification and project it into the future with climate models, we can see that the heat is going to be concentrated in the Arctic. We expect by the end of the century perhaps 7 degrees of warming, 7 to 8 degrees in the Arctic, and 3 to 4 degrees in the rest of the planet, which is still a lot, with, again, the big Arctic amplification. Now, let's look at climate change in the world as a whole. The two terms, climate change and global warming, are used interchangeably, but in fact, we should really use the word climate change when we talk about natural changes that are happening due to all kinds of natural causes, and global warming to the specific change that's happening because of the carbon dioxide and other gases that we put into the atmosphere. So climate change is ice ages, that's because that's natural, and this is the record of temperatures over the last 400,000 years from ice cores drilled down through the Greenland and Antarctic ice caps. And we see that the Earth has passed through a cycle of extremely warm and extremely cold conditions. That's the ice ages and the interglacials, which are the periods in between. So we've had this kind of sawtooth pattern where we emerged from an ice age about 12,000 years ago, and we're up here now in the warm interglacial. But before that, we were deep in an ice age, about 4 degrees colder than we are now. And that was a gradual decrease of temperature from the previous interglacial, which we emerged from another ice age. So we have this pattern of sawtooth, which is actually due to astronomical factors. It's because the Earth's orbit has a slight wobble on it, and that alters the amount of radiation received by the northern hemisphere and the southern hemisphere. So it's a natural phenomenon which causes glaciers to advance, give us an ice age, and then retreat, and we come out of the ice age. So if we allowed nature to take its course, we've come out of an ice age and we would be gradually sinking towards the next one. But we stopped sinking towards the next one. In fact, we're warming up. So this natural change is accompanied by a natural change in the carbon dioxide content of the atmosphere. When there's a lot of glaciers around and there's not many plants growing, then there's less carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So there are natural limits to carbon dioxide levels between 180 and 270 parts per million. Nature would prefer us to be in this range of carbon dioxide levels. But now we look at what we've done at the end of last century and the 19th century. It's shot up and now it's over 400. So we've never had carbon dioxide levels as high as we have now, and it's entirely due to us burning coal and then oil. We've done this to our climate, but we've added this huge amount of carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, and we've added a lot of other gases also which cause greenhouse warming, nitrous oxide and methane. These are two other climate gases which both cause global warming and which have increased because of industrialization, methane from natural gas and nitrous oxide from industrial processes. So we've done that and we're still doing it. There's for everything that you've heard about various global leaders promising to reduce carbon emissions is completely false. They've promised, but nobody's actually done anything. And the rate of increase of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere continues to increase exponentially. There's absolutely no evidence of any leveling off or reduction in carbon dioxide emissions by mankind. We really are addicted to burning things and producing carbon dioxide. So today, this is the present levels of carbon dioxide emissions. And we can see that in Europe, we can, and in the USA, we can feel all virtuous because Europe's gone down recently. And this is a bigger range of European countries. We've gone down. The USA has gone down slightly, but you can see that that's done at the cost of China and India rising very fast. It's essentially we've given over our dirty manufacturing industries to China and India, and they do all the nasty things with factories producing things, and so they emit the carbon dioxide, and we can feel virtuous that we're not. But if you add it all together, because carbon dioxide has no nationality, it spreads throughout the world, the planet is increasing in carbon dioxide level still exponentially. The way we think about what it does to the climate is called radiative forcing. That is, the greenhouse gases, which actually are preventing the Earth from emitting long-wave radiation. So the Earth wants to emit radiation due to its own temperature, but the radiation can't get out because of the gases that are in the atmosphere that hold it back. So that restraint on emissions is as if we were adding to the solar radiation. It's as if we were warming the Earth more by adding solar radiation. So we think of it as radiative forcing. So these are then enables us to measure what the different gases do. And the biggest greenhouse gas is carbon dioxide. Methane is coming along behind, about a quarter as much as carbon dioxide. Nitrous oxide and halocarbons, that's the gases from air conditioning systems. So these are the big emitters. We're getting a little bit of radiative cooling from aerosols, that's the dirty stuff we put into the atmosphere, and that helps to compensate a bit, but on the whole we have a large amount of positive radiative forcing, which is what's warming the planet. So that's global warming as opposed to climate change, which is natural. This is unnatural. So now I'm going to talk about what Arctic warming is doing to the planet and what its impacts are. And there are seven different kinds of impacts that I've identified, so I'm going to go through all seven. The first one is the sea ice retreat. That is, sea ice is retreating in the Arctic, and that's changing the albedo of the planet. That's changing the amount of radiation that's reflected back into space, because you're replacing a white surface by a dark surface. Then, secondly, that the ice, because it's getting thinner and changing its nature, that's accelerating the retreat. So that's the second one. The third is that the warmed air over the Arctic is causing the Greenland ice sheet to melt more rapidly, and that's causing an acceleration in global sea level rise. Then the fourth one is that snow line, that's the area of snow in the Northern Hemisphere, has been going down as well very rapidly, and that in itself increases the albedo feedback. Then the fifth one is that there's a direct threat, which really does threaten our well-being at this moment, which is the threat from the emission of methane from offshore waters of the Arctic. And this is a problem we're looking at the moment. It's a very, very serious one. The sixth one is that the retreat of sea ice is causing extreme weather events, which we've all been experiencing the last two or three years, and that has an impact on global food production. That's very serious. And finally, there's a decline, leave the good news till the end, there's a decline in the strength of the Arctic thermohaline circulation. I'll explain what that is later. It's the ocean circulation in the Atlantic, and the retreat of sea ice is causing changes there which are actually cooling Europe, but cooling mainly countries like Britain and not Central Europe. But they're not actually cooling Europe, but it's reducing the rate of warming of Europe. So that's, in a sense, it's good news for Europe, but bad news for the Gulf of Mexico, because that's warming up more rapidly. So let's look first at the sea ice retreat, number one, and then the associated question of the thinning of sea ice. Sea ice retreat was first noticed in about 1950, and until about 1950 it was difficult to measure anyway, because you had no instruments. You depended on sailors sailing around the ice edge, catching seals and whales, and saying where the ice edge was. And then from 1950 onwards, we started to have aerial surveys. And then from 1970s onwards, we had satellites. So our knowledge has got better and better. And we find that that at all times of year, the Arctic sea ice has been retreating since about 1950, but the most rapid retreat has been in the summer months, that's July to September, and that's because the ice in the Arctic Ocean fills the Arctic Ocean round to the coastlines of Alaska and Siberia, and it's easier to see a retreat because in summer that the sea ice falls back from those coastlines and leaves some open water around the edges. So we can see it better in the summer. Starting 2005, in a typical summer, the ice fills nearly the whole Arctic basin. In winter, the ice covers the whole Arctic Ocean right up to the coastlines of Siberia and Alaska and Canada. But in the summer, it retreats a little bit. So if you're very brave and you can try and sail an icebreaker through the Northern Sea Route, that's this route around the north of Siberia, or the Northwest Passage, which is the sea route around from Baffin Bay across the north of Canada. But you have to be lucky and you have a lot of ice. But then in 2005, the ice started to retreat from that limit and we had more open water. Then in 2007, there was a much bigger retreat. A whole big chunk was taken out of the Arctic Ocean, giving you a big blue sea at the top end of the world, which was never there before. So this big area became ice-free. Then in 2012, there was an even bigger retreat, and this is the record so far. So it lies even further back. There's an even bigger area of open water in this part of the Arctic Ocean, which is called the Beaufort Sea, and less ice all round. So in only a decade, we've gone from the summer ice, that's summer in the Arctic means September, because that's when there's least ice, gone from summer ice filling the whole Arctic Ocean still, to summer ice only filling less than half of the Arctic Ocean. But this wasn't matched by climate models. The sort of official view of what's happening to climate is given by the periodic assessments by the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, but they make use of computer models of climate change, which on the whole, for the planet as a whole, work quite well, but they don't work for the Arctic. These are the models gave you gradually diminishing through this coming century to 2100 here. But what's actually happened is we've already got that amount of decrease by 2012. So the reality has been the ice has been collapsing, the ice area in summer has been falling away really fast. Then what does that mean in terms of changes to global warming? Well, there was a study done last year in the University of California where they looked at the loss of ice between summer now and summer 20 years ago and looked at what that does to this thing called global albedo. Albedo is the fraction of solar radiation falling on the surface of the Earth that's reflectedly out into space because the surface is bright or white. So a white surface, freshly fallen snow, has an albedo of about 90%. 90% of the solar radiation is reflected straight back into space. But open sea or land or forest has an albedo of less than 10%. So 90% of the radiation is absorbed. And the effect of this sea ice retreat in the Arctic alone, according to the calculations of these people at the University of California, has been to reduce the average albedo of the Earth from 52% to 48%. And it's the same as adding a quarter to the amount of heating of the planet due to greenhouse gases. But even that model doesn't take account of is the fact that the ice has been getting thinner and changing its character. So first of all, there's ice that's more than a year old is called multi-year ice. It's very thick, rugged kind of ice. But this last decade, the area of multi-year ice has gone right down. So nearly all the ice in the Arctic is now young ice. Ice called first-year ice that's less than a year old. That's a huge change in the character of the ice in the Arctic. And we've been following the thickness changes by going underneath the ice with submarines, some British Navy submarines, and the US has been doing the same, and measuring the thickness of the ice from below. If you look at the Arctic as a whole and look at all the data, including the US data, there's been a thinning of between 40 and 50%. As not only is the ice smaller in area, but it's only half as thick as it used to be. So if we include the effect of the change in ice characteristics, the change in age, and multiply that by the change in area, we get a change in volume. And the volume change is a much more rapid decrease than the area change. The ice is shrinking, but as well as shrinking, it's getting thinner. And if you combine the shrinking of area and the thinning of the ice, the amount left is much less. So the amount that's there in the summer now is a quarter of what it was in the 1980s. Maybe in only 2 or 3 years' time, there won't be any ice in the Arctic in September. There'll be ice all the rest of the year, but in September, there'll be a disappearance. And the way this has been represented is this thing called the Arctic death spiral, which is that you take a graph where the distance from the center is the amount of the volume of ice at different months of the year. So September of 1979, there was this much. And if you go then forward in time to now, the volume goes right down until it's here, less than a quarter as much as there was in 1980. And every other month of the year, these are all the other months, the ice volume also goes down. But September is the month where it will disappear first, and then perhaps August and October. And then the winter months, the ice will stay longer, a few more decades, but it will still eventually go. It's decreasing both in area and in thickness. So that's something we should worry about.
That was part one of a one-hour talk by Professor Peter Wadhams on Arctic amplification, climate change and global warming, new challenges from the top of the world. He spoke in Milano, Italy, on May 29, 2015. Peter Wadhams is the UK's most experienced sea ice scientist and was professor of ocean physics at Cambridge from 1992 to 2015. He has made more than 50 expeditions to both polar regions. His most recent book is A Farewell to Ice. Come back when TUC Radio returns to hear Professor Wadhams talk about methane emissions, ocean currents, and more. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. Go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. My name is Maria Gelöden. Thank you for listening.